Gene Homnick.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad
Evans. This is David Salisbury.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L. Tier J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Yancey McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Full Contact Fighter Radio is the name of the program. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat. Joining me as always now is Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing?
Very well, Kelsey, thank you.
Great. That's you sure you sound a little unsure about that response.
Yeah, I'm okay. Oh. I'm all right.
I wish you were
sad. I'm saddened. It was very stressful after actually making picks, watching MMA, because I'm usually a very dispassionate observer. But I found that I guess this is I have no real interest in gambling, so I guess that's the equivalent of gambling. Makes seemingly meaningless events like the Super Bowl important to you.
Well, you probably just really offended a good 75% of our audience. Way to go, buddy.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. You know, now I'm going to get all these emails. Well, you're hating on the NFL. What's up with your Canadian rules? And I'm not a big football fan on either side of the border, to be honest, so whatever.
Well, I grew up in Saskatchewan, so I'm a Ryder fan.
Right. Yes, and it is true for those Americans who have possibly heard this crazy rumor, as it were. At one point in the Canadian Football League, there were two teams that had the same name, the Rough Riders. Ottawa Rough Riders and Saskatchewan Rough Riders, part of our proud...
But there was a lot of teams they couldn't double up on. They had to double up on names at some point. There was eight teams in the CFL at that time.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult, and it's definitely a testament to our intellectual prowess as Canadians that... You know, we go with two Rough Riders and an eight-league team.
But one was the Rough Riders and one was the Rough Riders.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's definitely a difference there. And
Two words.
Yeah. All right, well, enough of the CFL, NFL talk. We got a big show coming up. Joe Riggs is going to join us, fresh off his victory a couple nights ago now. We talked to him yesterday, actually, when we did the interview. But, he's going to be joining us. Talk about the Ultimate Fight Night win, and then we have Mac Danzig, the King of the Cage lightweight champion, one of the better lightweight fighters in North America. Many people would say, I think, he's won 11 fights in a row. We're going to talk to him about what's up in his future and what he's expecting to do as far as future opportunities go for him in mixed martial arts, because some people want to know what his situation is with King of the Cage. So he talks to us about that. So, yeah, it's a couple interesting segments for sure. And, I guess we should get to it, Brennan.
Let's get to it. We got to hit it hard.
Yes. All right, you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Miletich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against jiu-jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the San Jose Razor Claws, led by Frank Shamrock, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Miletich versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV. Cards subject to change.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at FCFighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
This is Mr. Cripples,
a.k.a. the Cat Smasher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Joe Riggs. And Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this, and probably not, but you have the prestigious honor of being the first Full Contact Fighter two-time radio guest.
There you go. I'm honored.
Yes.
Thank you for having me twice.
Yeah, it's quite the honor.
You thought yesterday was a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel good today. This is going to hold my career. To be on the radio with you guys twice in a row, I'm happy with it.
Yeah, it should be the icing on the cake. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, Joe, an impressive performance last night. Just walk us through your thoughts on the fight. Was that kind of the way you thought it was going to unfold, or did you expect it to be a bit more standing, or were you looking to bang it out a bit more?
Yeah, I wanted to bang more. Yeah, I hit him with two good shots off the bat. He did not want to stand anymore, and he kept wanting to clinch. So from the clinch, I just hit him with a little toss, like a little hip toss. He went flying in the air. He felt so weak from the clinch. I had to do it. Then I took it back, and he scrambled. And he got out of it. So I mean, he was better for the triangle. So I got him with that. But yeah, initially I wanted to. Fight to go a little more stand up. Because that was one of the first times I went in the fight, you know, I was thinking clearly, I was moving clearly, I felt calm, you know. I think I broke some ground last night, you know, because usually I go in there and flip it out. I throw caution to win, I don't do anything technical, and it was a good time because I felt like I was thinking a lot more in that fight. It was good.
Yeah.
Joe, what? First of all, we were happy to get to see your fight on TV, and it was lucky the Lister fight wasn't two more rounds, so we got to see you. You must be happy about that. But what the hell was going on in that fight? So we watched it on a replay, and Von Flew, when he was in the triangle, was giving you the finger right before you tapped, and they blurred it out on TV, so I had to go back a couple times. Well, now, isn't that the last thing you want to do to some guy who's got you in a triangle hold? What was going on there? Did you see that?
Yeah, I thought he was out. I had the triangle since that his knee pinched up, and I was like, he was gurgling, but he stopped gurgling. Now I told Mondragon, I'm like, he's out. He's unconscious. And then he flips me off. And I'm like, oh my god! I sent him a little tighter and I squeezed more, and he starts coughing and spitting, and he starts tapping out. I'm like, he tapped. And I started letting go, and they hit and stop it, so I chose. I put it back on, chose him again, he taps again, let him go. Yeah, he's a nut guy. He's got a beard.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because he tapped, and then the referee hadn't jumped in right away, and then you let go of the choke, and then the referee's not jumping in, so you had to put it back on. Then he taps instantly. It was kind of a bizarre sequence.
But. Yeah, it was weird. But, I mean, it worked out good for me, so I don't really care. But he was backstage throwing a fit. And he was throwing stuff around like all upset. I mean, what do you think was going to happen? He's lucky he didn't go out there in a stretcher. Lucky he left the ring. He got choked out. I mean, really. I mean, if the fight was the way I wanted to, I just would have knocked him out. You know, that's the whole point was. I've never felt the guy that was so slow and so methodical on his feet. I mean, it was a that guy's television because I'm real quick and that guy's just clueless on his feet.
No.
I should have stood up a lot more. That mistake on my part.
Oh, yeah, win's a win, right?
Yeah.
Now, looking at, you know, now you've come back to 170 and you've got this win under your belt, and looking around at the division, and clearly, you know, Diego Sanchez's big win last night. What are your thoughts on that fight? I think the one issue that's going to come out of that is I don't think many people would disagree with the fact that Diego was awarded the decision, but did you hear that one judge gave it a 30-26 in favor of Diego? I didn't see that yet. I was looking for that today.
If it was anybody, I would bet it was going to be peaceful. I mean, he does that a lot. I think people's a good guy. I like him. But sometimes I don't know what he's doing when he's scoring the guy, the judge scorecard. But, I mean, I thought it was one round even going in the third round. I thought it was one round each. And it happened pretty much like I thought it would. Diego was set a pace that Carol probably couldn't keep up with. Like, he wasn't going to be in shape that Diego was. And it caught up with him, and just Diego overwhelmed him. Yeah. And I think Carol was in better shape. Carol could beat him. Carol is a damn good fighter. Both great fighters. The fight unfolded exactly like I expected it to.
So what do you think
I guess this is an interesting question for you, because you've, in the Matt Hughes fight, when you came down to 170, it looked like you were absolutely spent in that fight. So what difference in training? I know you cut down again now, and you look great last night. You look strong. You didn't look sapped at all. So how did the cutting down work differently for you for that time? And was your conditioning or your cardio conditioning any different in this fight than the Hughes fight?
That, you know, before I would walk around, I'd say like around 195, 200 pounds and cut down the last week or something like that. I mean, you know, at this time I didn't do that. You know, I did my own thing and I dieted down. I was walking around at the 180s when I got to Vegas. So I only cut 5 pounds Wednesday. I didn't cut much weight at all. I was everybody left and went to go cut weight. I was leaving the sauna at 11:30. Like, nothing else to do because I was already on weight. And everybody else, and I see everybody else dying, and I'm like, man, this is cool. So, I mean, it was a different thing for me. So I just, the main thing is I dieted and got down more of my weight than since killed myself trying to cut 15, 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Well. So describe that, Joe, for someone who's never cut weight. What does that feel like, the difference between you fighting at 170 those two different times? What's the physical difference in the way that you walk into the ring?
You know, I cut weight a couple of times before. It's like you go in there, and I'm so scared. I'm scared to walk in there, not because really I'm scared of, you know, getting hurt or something like that. I'm fearing the exhaustion part, because I know in my heart that I'm still super exhausted, and I'm not fully rehydrated everything from the cut. So that's, I mean, you walk into the octagon, and you're somewhat defeated in that angle of cutting weight, but then you walk in, you cut the weight right, and you know, I go in there with a certain level of confidence, and like I did last night, and it's a lot better. You know, I go in there, I know if need be, I can go three rounds and push the pace to how I want to do.
Well, and you looked, you know, like you had it dialed with the fight by Nick Diaz, right? I mean, it looked like in that fight you didn't have too much problems cutting down to the weight.
No, I didn't. I mean, it was, when I saw Chris Lytle, it was a learning experience. It was a hard cut, but still, what Chris Lytle and Nick Diaz was a similar cut thing. They did the same thing. I cut some real heavy, but and then the Hughes thing, I just didn't have enough time. Like, I cut real heavy. But this time it's different. So I mean, with Diaz, I gassed out in three rounds, and this time I don't think I would, because I train super super hard, you know. Mm-hmm. And if people don't know, I mean, I do so much conditioning. So I mean, so I should be able to go, you know, 10-5 in rounds, you know. But you go in there and you find myself wheezing after 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the case when I train that hard, you know.
Now, last time you were on the show, you were talking about Drew Fickett, the fact that you'd like to fight him, and he didn't want to look too beyond this fight with Jason last night. But where are you looking now, Joe? Do you have a sense at all of who the UFC might try to match you up against next? I mean, the 170-pound division is stacked. Is Fickett the first guy you would like to take on?
Yeah, I'd love to fight Drew Fickett. I would love it. But I don't think he'll take the fight. I mean, he knows it. I pound that guy's head something. He knows I've trained that guy for years. He knows that I do them. So I think right there I already have a mental edge. I mean, I hope he does. I hope he's got some delusion of grandeur that he could beat me. So obviously, first and foremost, I like to fight Fickett. That's not, you know, there's a plethora of guys out there that just the division's so stacked. Like, you know, Josh Burke would be a guy I'd like to fight, you know. There's a bunch of guys. There's so many tough guys, like John Cates. I mean, there's countless amount of guys that are tough out there. I mean, you guys pick them, you know.
Yeah.
You say you might not want to take the fight. Describe to the sort of outsiders from the UFC. You have a contract with the UFC, and they say Joe Silva folds you up and says, "Do you want to do this?" How much leeway do you have in taking fights or not taking fights in terms of what you're contractually obliged to? And
you always have the opportunity to take a fight or turn the fight down. But with the UFC, I've never turned down a fight, never once in my life. And every fight they've offered me, I've taken it without even batting an eye. And that's what fighters do. You know, you always take a fight at the top of you. You know, you kind of like you challenge your manhood in a way. So if they can turn down the fight with me when they offered him for this open fight night, so Von Fu stepped up. And then, you know, and then I talked to Joe, and I hope Joe doesn't get mad at me that I said this. You know, they're going to fight. They offered him to me, they offered him to John Finch, turned them both down, so Joe's going to sit him down for a while. You know, you don't have the opportunity of being a true ticket to pick and choose your fights, take them when they come to you, and you'd be thankful for them.
Yeah.
So unless you're willing to tour Chuck by now, you don't pick and choose to say no to your fight.
Now, you mentioned John Fitch, and I would say that he's one of the, in my opinion, that he's one of the guys that sometimes gets overlooked. You know, everyone talks about Diego Sanchez, and of course, him beating Carroll raises his stock that much more. But a guy like Fitch, I mean, would you be interested in fighting a guy like Fitch? And do you agree that maybe perhaps he's sometimes left out as far as conversations as some of the top welterweights?
Yeah, I do. I think John Fitch is a real tough guy. And a lot of people don't know his name because he hasn't had the marquee fights. But I think he's a guy he's got a humongous wrestling background, and that he's adapted an AKA with a great stand-up skill too. So I think he's a tough fight for anybody in the welterweight division. I think he stacks up with guys like Diego. I mean, he's right up there in the contenders, man. He's a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a guy. Joe Silva said he's a guy. A lot of guys are ducking because he's not too much known, but he's a killer. So that's a lot of guys don't want to fight him. I'm not saying that at all. I'd fight anybody.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're pretty much settled in at 170. What was the process of making that decision? Did the UFC have input into that? Your trainers, or just is that someplace you personally want a goal you personally set for yourself?
This is something that I wanted. I mean, everybody. I mean, my wife, including, trying to push me to 185. And nobody likes to see me cut that much weight. So I'm gonna get crabby towards the end. I'm not the same person, But Joe Silva, my training partners. My trainers, and everybody said, sustain your fight at 5, why, But then, after the Diaz fight, I walked around at a lower weight, and I didn't get that heavy. So I just said, why not, I mean, I look at Rich Franklin, I see what he cuts, I see what a lot of the top guys cut. So, I mean, I can do the same thing. I mean, I've cut a little 1 or 2 pounds extra, but, it's just worth it to be the bigger guy in a small weight class,
Now, one of your training partners, Johnny Alessio, fought last night, and he took on a guy named, I hope I'm pronouncing the last name right, Alex Serdikov in the WEC. Have you talked to Johnny this morning at all, Joe?
John just called me when I was on the plane, and I'm going to call him back when I get off. I talked to my manager. I told John, I saw that guy fight Mark Weir a year ago, mm-hmm. and I said, John's going to walk through that guy. And from what I understand, it was a war.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a tough
one. John said, John's like, dude, I fought last night, and it was an absolute war. Cornerback, I'll tell you about it. So, I mean, the guy must have gotten a hell of a lot better because John's a great fighter. For that guy to hang with John, he must have gotten a lot better because if he was the same guy that fought Mark Weir, John would have steamrolled him,
Yeah, from what I've read, it sounds like it was a pretty close fight, competitive. It definitely sounds like it was a war, so.
He can't be that beat up today because he was on the underground and called out Diego again.
John did, really?
Yeah,
he's a maniac. He's a guy that sounds like he was robbed in that fight. I mean, a lot of people do. John's a warrior. He's a tough fighter he's in the UFC. He's up that level. I mean, he just wants the respect he deserves. John's another guy that a lot of people didn't really know his name, but he was a tough fighter around the way. And I'm glad he got that big new fight, but people didn't know his name. But I don't know, man. He's on the internet rattling off this morning. It's funny.
Now, in mentioning that, Joe, if you were to fight a Diego Sanchez, how would you approach it differently, having watched him? If you take a fight like last night against Carroll, is there something, would you have a game plan, like using your own skill set against Diego Sanchez? How would you go at someone like him?
John Lester fought the perfect fight against Diego.
Yeah.
I mean, up until he threw that flying knee and ended up getting his back taken, John fought the perfect fight, maybe be a little more aggressive, and you have to condition yourself because he pushes the pace that only American people can keep up with. So, I mean, Diego's a great fighter, man. He's a tough. And you just got to condition yourself and, keep evading jabs. Obviously, he wouldn't want to stand up with me. So, there's certain things you have to do to tweak the game to fight a guy like Diego. But it's easy and foreseeable goal to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think that's the key for Carlo, then, is working with guys like Couture and Tito and actually working on his conditioning as a part of his training regimen rather than something
grappling? I think so. I think Carroll gutted that last round and a half out all hard. I mean, I think he was spent after the first round and still came back and won the second round. Carroll, I mean, that guy's got so much heart of a lion, man. I was talking to him last night. He's such a great guy. And I was talking to one of the family members who was in his corner. He was actually crying watching that fight. It was always hard seeing a family member take abuse like that. But, yeah, Carroll, just all he needs to do is work on his conditioning. I'm not sure what he's doing. But just get his conditioning up, and in my opinion, I think he would have beat Diego if his condition would have been right.
Joe, my last question for you, and we've been asking some of the other the fighters have been on the show the last couple of weeks. Looking ahead to the UFC main event on Saturday, Chuck versus Sobral, I guess it's a two-part question. One, and Forrest Griffin didn't feel this way, but I kind of feel, my opinion is that some people are maybe looking past Sobral a little bit, not giving him a decent chance against Chuck. What's your perspective on that? And two, what's your prediction on the fight itself?
I think that's a perfect thing. I think people are looking past Babalu. I think he's a tough guy. I mean, he's on a big winning streak. He's coming in with a lot of confidence. And I think that's people are looking over him. I hope Chuck doesn't, for his sake. Mm-hmm. And so your second question, I think if Chuck's in shape, if Babalu pushes at good pace and, you know, gets Chuck tired, I think Babalu could beat him.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, it's not likely. Chuck would be the favorite, obviously, but I think Babalu definitely has enough skills to beat Chuck any given day.
Brendan, anything else for Joe?
Yeah, Joe, I have one last question for you. You seem to have a very conventional, or seem to appear to have a more conventional stance, and I was noticing last night that when I was watching Carl and especially Chris Lieben in their stand-up, you almost get kind of sick, queasy watching them because their stand-up is so unconventional, and that seemed to work out for Lieben last night, but what's it like fighting someone that looks that unconventional, and do you think that works for them?
No, I think they do the best they have with it. I think obviously they don't want to fight like that. In my opinion, I have the best conventional boxing in the UFC. I mean, I really do. I mean, my boxing is on point, but I mean, they work what they got. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get it done. Like Carol was throwing that sloppy jab out, hitting with it. You know, and Chris Cleveland threw that awkward hook and knocked him out with it. You know, I don't think I think they wish they do have a better boxing style, but they get it done with their style, so best luck to them, man.
Yeah. Well, Joe, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you probably want to get back home and relax and get away from the media and the sport for a couple of days, so we appreciate it, and take care, man.
Hey, have you heard from Frank Mir yet?
No, I haven't heard from Frank Mir yet. No.
What?
Not yet. Why? What do you think he's going to do? Actually, no, yeah, I saw him on Saturday.
Well, you called him out on our show, buddy. Don't you remember?
I remember that.
Yeah.
I saw Frank Saturday. I wish him good luck in his fight.
Well, forget the 170, Joe. Let's get you back up to 260, 280. Hit the cheeseburgers hard.
I'm working on that today. That's all the beer I'm going to drink.
Enjoy yourself, Joe.
All right, guys.
Take care.
See you later.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mo must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mo before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Mac Danzig joins us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio. Mac, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. And I understand we were talking briefly before we went on the air, and you just drove back from WEC cornering Johnny Alessio last night. Won a beat Alex. Probably pronouncing this wrong.
Surgikov.
Yeah, Surgikov.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was a tough fight, Mac.
Oh, it was an incredible fight. I mean, I'm not sure. I would definitely consider it one of the candidates for Fight of the Year this year. It was a complete war. That was what MMA is all about. He came back from a pretty severe beating in round two. That Surdikov guy is really tough. You know, he's a 85-pounder coming down, and John met him at 75 because the dude couldn't make 70. And it was was a really, really good fight. John showed a lot of heart. I mean, that's something, you know, I train with him all the time, and that's something I knew he had all along, but he never really had to show it because he's got good footwork and good movement, and he's able to control most of the fight. But this guy just took it to him and, you know, brought out the best in him. He came back after being exhausted, completely exhausted and beat down, and came back and dropped the guy twice and got his back and got the choke. It was really good fight.
Yeah, and hopefully at some point the rest of us will be able to see it.
Yeah.
You know, going back into your career a little bit, you just fought August 4th at King of the Cage Rapid Fire, beating Buddy Clinton by decision. Mac, tell just for those of us who didn't see the fight and pay-per-view, especially for some of our Canadian listeners up here, hasn't been shown yet. I don't know if it's delayed down in the States, but what are your thoughts on that fight? Was it pretty tough sledding for you, or were you pretty confident you were going to get the judge's decision?
I knew I was going to win. I was in really, really good shape for this one. I had a couple different training camps. I went out to Zion's with Jay Huron and Forrest Griffin and for a week, about 3 weeks out, and then been floating around at different places here in California. Then I was up in the training camp with George Grigel and Riggs and Edwin and Alessio, and you know, all that time I got myself in really good shape. I was probably in the best shape I've been in for a fight. Dieted down to 158, felt really good. But when I went in there, you know, it wasn't the kind of fight that I like to fight. I'm more of a, you know, if the fight is on the ground, I like to pass a guard. I like to get good positions, strike from there, go for submissions. That's my style. I don't really like to sit in the guard and strike. And he kind of forced that game on because, you know, he has a good guard. He reclaims guard good, but he doesn't defend the takedown well. So the takedown was always there, so I was scoring points with that. But it was difficult for me to really do what I wanted to do. So I ended up playing a type of fight that I normally don't like to fight. It was still a good fight. It was a real technical battle, but mainly I think it was my cardio that outlasted him, and it was just too much for him. It was his first time cutting a 55, and I've been doing this for a while now, and, you know, it came time for the third round. I was fresh, and he didn't have much left, so I just, in my opinion, I won rounds 2 and 3, and the first round was pretty much even. Neither one of us really were able to do much in the first.
Now you're the King of the Cage, lightweight champion, 155 pound, and that was your fourth title defense, right?
Yeah, I think so. I won the title against Takumi, and then that was my third defense right there. So, yeah, that was my third defense, yeah.
Now, when you look back at your career, I mean, you've got a record now of, it's like 15-2-1, is that right?
Yeah, professional record, yeah.
Yeah, and you had a couple losses early in your career, and since then you've like rattled off 11 in a row, I think. Did you attribute that to anything, Mac? Did you change anything up in your training, or is it just a simple matter of you know, you just evolving as a fighter and you've just been able to put together the wins?
I think it was a little bit of everything. When I first started training hard, when I moved out to California and training in a real environment with other fighters, it was at Raw, and which is now known as R1, I guess. I was training with Trigg and Vladimir and Fernando Vasconcelos and those guys, and it was really, really good training, but at the same time, I don't know, my body wasn't ready for it, but, you know, they were throwing me in against guys that were way bigger than me, and it was strange. I just kept getting a lot of injuries, you know, and after I ended up leaving there and going out to Millennia, I realized, you know, I had already been doing this for a while, and I realized that I need to listen to my body and train the right way, and a lot more sparring was involved as opposed to, you know, what was going on out there with a lot of heavy lifting and stuff like that, which really wasn't good for me, and a lot of sparring with guys my size, and that helped. And also dropping to 155, that was the biggest thing. For the longest time, I thought I couldn't make 55 just because I didn't know how to cut properly. And, you know, I have pretty much a strict vegetarian diet, like a vegan diet, and that's helped a lot with me cutting to 155. And I just feel really good. Once I went out to Millennia and started going with guys my size, and you know, it just felt really, really good. And I just got on a roll, you know. The 155 is my weight class. I don't belong at 170, so.
Yeah.
It's a combination of everything.
Do you find there's a lot of fighters that have a vegan diet, or is that pretty rare?
I think I'm the only one. I mean, well, I know there are other people that train out there that have vegan diets, but as far as active professional fighters, I believe I'm the only person. There could be a few other people, but I think that's it. I know there's some other people that are vegetarians. And they're pretty successful with it, but as far as strictly vegan, I think that's it. There's another guy named Omar Love. Not a lot of people have heard of him. He has a school out in California. He's a really good fighter. He is a kickboxer, and he's got a vegan diet now. So I've actually turned a lot of people on to my diet. Even people that will never go vegan, they use some of the dieting techniques that I use to cut weight, and Joe Riggs actually using it. He probably won't give me credit for it, but he's using my diet this time to cut for Von Flu, and you know, it worked out well for him. So.
Now, you mentioned the move to Millennia Jiu-Jitsu and training with George Ergel and Joe Riggs, some of the other guys in the mix.
Right.
You know, it just seems like nowadays, and talking to a lot of fighters, of course, there's some guys who kind of stick with the one camp, and that's it. But then there's a lot of fighters who mix it up. You know, they have got their home base, but they also go and train, you know, depending on what opponent they're coming up against and where they think they're at, what needs to be worked on in their career.
Right.
Do you think that's kind of the new evolution in MMA, Mac? Do you think the days are gone where a fighter might just stay in one camp and have success doing that?
No, you know what? I think it's in, like, a mid-range right now because a lot of places are popping up. So, you know, a lot of really good places are out there, like the Zion's camp with all those good guys and the hard training and work ethic that they have. And you know, all these places are coming up, so people are starting to travel more now. But I think once the sport gets really to its saturation point where you've got a lot of great training places like that, everywhere throughout the United States and Canada and, you know, all of North America, you're going to see a lot more people sticking with their camps, I think, because it'll be available. But, you know, basically what John and I do is whenever we have the money or whenever someone is able to help us out with bringing us out to a training camp, we're on it because, you know, we help each other out a lot and train together, but we can only do so much. There's not a whole lot of people at Millennia like it used to be, and right now I'm living in Hollywood with my girlfriend, and it's kind of in limbo right now what's going on with the Legends Gym. It's supposed to open up in a couple days. I hope it does, and that's going to be my mainstay for a while, but until then, we're just going to float around and train at the good places. Like, we go up to Utah and train at Jeremy Horn's, and just all around, and it does. It really helps, you know, like working with different people all the time, getting used to different styles, it's good. But yeah, to answer your question, I think more people are gonna eventually settle down to more camps because the sport is just doing nothing but growing bigger and bigger, so it's good.
Now, looking at the King of the Cage rankings on the website, I'm not sure how current they are, but I'm assuming I'm not sure how current they are, but when you look at the top 10 list of the lightweight where you're the champion,
right,
you've already beaten several of the guys on that list. And then they've got Nam Phan ranked as number one contender. You know, there's a guy who just recently beat one of Canada's better 145-pound fighters,
yeah,
Ryan Diaz.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to see that fight?
Yeah, I'd like to fight that fight. That would be a really good fight for both of us. Nam actually impressed me in that fight with Ryan Diaz. It wasn't so much of a dominant performance. Ryan is the first legitimate guy that he's fought in a long time, and you know, I wasn't really impressed with Nam, like, losing a decision to Nick Erdl and stuff. But, you know, like I kind of underestimated him, I think, as a fighter. I figured he was, you know, because he was fighting nothing but tomato cans for so long, and it was just like, okay, dude, you know what I mean? Like you armbarred, you know, Tom Smith in 10 seconds, but, you know, who is he? You know, so when he fought Ryan and stayed in there and was going to the body with his punches and mixing it up and you know, keeping the fight stand up, that impressed me, and I think me and him would be a good fight. I'll be totally honest with you, I don't see the fight going out of the second round. I mean, I really feel I'm just much better than him, but I think it would be an exciting fight, and I think he's he's definitely a legitimate fighter at 155. I think that's probably him or that guy Cub Swanson. Either one of those guys would be good guys for me to fight that are on that list. But to be honest with you, I'd like to move up to some of the bigger shows. You know, that's my goal, and to fight some of the best in the world. I feel I'm ready now to do it, and a lot of opportunities I've had to pass up because of my exclusive contract with King of the Cage. But hopefully things will be coming around for me, and you guys will be able to see me in Bushido against a world-class fighter, and we'll see how I do. That's the plan, anyway.
Yeah, that leads right into my next question. Is I was going to ask you, you know, a lot of your name is starting to get brought up more and more frequently, the 11 wins in a row and the King of the Cage lightweight champion. So what is that, your status? I mean, you just mentioned that it sounds like you've got an exclusive contract with King of the Cage right now. Is that part of the reason that we haven't heard murmurings of negotiations with UFC or
that's pretty much it. I mean, I like King of the Cage. I'm happy with the exposure I've gotten and everything. I just wish that you know, they would be a little more lenient with saying, okay, you know, like, for example, okay, well, the reality show wants you. We're going to go ahead and let you do that because we don't want to hold you back from something like that. They could really boost your career. But they don't want to do that. They, you know, they put money into marketing me, and they want to keep me for the remainder of the contract, which is understandable. You know, it's a business thing. I've also, you know, been offered a whole lot of other things, but you know, it sucks that I got to turn them down. But I was actually very, very close to getting into Bushido as a last minute replacement when Brennan pulled out, and then the only reason why I didn't fight was because Brennan decided he was gonna get back in. So just knowing that the King of the Cage people pushed for me to help me get that Bushido fight makes me happy, makes me know that something like that is on the horizon. So hopefully, if not this show, this Pride show in Vegas, hopefully maybe the Bushido after that that's in Japan, maybe if I keep winning my fights in King of the Cage, I'll pop up in that one. I just, like I said, it doesn't matter to me whether it's UFC, IFL, Bushido, like whatever. I just want to fight the best guys out there. I've been doing this for a while, and I'm ready to step it up and test myself and fight the best guys in the world.
How many fights do you have left on the King of the Cage contract?
The contract has a second year option. I'm not sure what is exactly involved in that, and I have to talk to my manager and everything. But the 1 year is going to be next February, and you know, it's frustrating to me because every time I talk to anybody, they're always like, well, when are you fighting in the UFC? Like, look at who they're putting in the UFC. This guy made it in. This guy made it in. Why aren't you in there? You know, and it's you know, really frustrating for me to deal with. But, you know, I'm taking it for what it's worth and going to keep plugging away and fighting. And hopefully, like I said, the exclusivity it only applies if, you know, to some of the other organizations in the U.S., but the King of the Cage is cool with me fighting in Bushido if they can make it happen. But that's a whole nother argument right there in itself, trying to talk to the Japanese promoters and getting their okay and everything. It's a difficult process, so we'll see. Hopefully Bushido, and if not, once my contract's up, whatever.
Yeah.
If I keep winning, I guess I'm gonna be able to do whatever I need to do. But I just want to fight the best guys. That's all there is to it. I want to fight the best guys in the world. Have a good show, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned before, you know, myself and Brendan, who unfortunately couldn't join us for this segment, and I know he wanted to talk to you, but we're both Canadians, and Brendan's actually from Edmonton. He lives in Edmonton, Alberta, and you've been up to Calgary now a couple times for a couple fights. Did Johnny Alessio warn you about the frigid winters that were in store for you? You must have been up here when it was pretty cold in Calgary.
Yeah, it was cold up there, but I'll tell you what, I don't mind the cold. I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and even though that's not known for being way up north, it gets plenty cold there. You know, 1.5 feet of snow every winter, and it's something really. I mean, I don't like the heat out here. When I was in Vegas, I was dying. It was 108 degrees training with those guys, and
yeah.
Jay Huron's running like 30 seconds, like 400 meter sprints, and just like killing all of us, and I couldn't even deal with the heat. But the cold doesn't bother me at all. Actually, like, it reminds me of when I was a kid in Pennsylvania playing in the snow, so yeah. I'm down with that. Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all. My opponent up in Calgary, the last time I fought, he was from Puerto Rico, so I knew it was bothering him, but it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes I talk to fighters, and like myself being out in Vancouver, most people just kind of assume, or some American fighters assume, that all of Canada is this like frigid tundra, and
right,
you know,
Vancouver
is really mild. It's actually, we don't even get snow here, so it's sometimes funny talking to guys and say, "Oh, it must be so cold." But Calgary, Calgary and Alberta, it's prairie country.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Cold. Yeah.
Yeah, my girlfriend's actually from BC. She's from Victoria and lives in Vancouver a little while too, and she's totally adapted now to the Southern California temperatures, and she can't handle anything below 60. It's pathetic. But I'm different. I love the cold. So,
well, Mac, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you did a lot of driving today, and so we appreciate you coming on the show. And if you could just hold on the line off the air here for a second, I'll talk to you a bit off the air. But thanks again for coming on.
Okay. Man. Thank you very much. No problem. Thanks.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the San Jose Razor Claws, led by Frank Shamrock, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV. Cards subject to change.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Well, that almost sums up another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. Just people have to endure us rambling on here for a few minutes, and then we'll call it quits. But it's
else rambling.
Joe Riggs seemed a little flat today. You know, no dissing Joe. We thanked him for coming on. I think he was probably tired. Probably was up late. But as far far less controversial than the first time he was on the show.
He's probably slightly hungover.
Yeah.
Slightly emotionally exhausted.
And he's driving back.
Can't help but be emotionally exhausted after a big fight like that.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think he was driving back too, so I'm just giving him a hard time. But
he's probably relieved that Frank Mir didn't take him out.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure Frank Mir and all you know, he probably listens to this program all the time. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But no, I mean, even in saying he was a little flat, he still had some interesting comments. You know, he had mentioned to us before that he was looking at Drew Fickett. You know, so it'd be nice to see if that fight happens.
Well, Kelsey, should we get down to it and talk about our picks, discuss?
That's right, let's get into the picks.
The big, big fight card.
Yeah, of course, we didn't make picks for every one of the fights. I think we pretty much took only the fights that were going to be shown. And then, ironically, we did pick on Joe Riggs, Jason Von Flew, which was shown in the end. And we both picked Riggs, so we got nothing to argue about that. Brendan, Josh Koscheck, Jonathan Goulet, you went with Jonathan Goulet. And that one didn't turn out for you. I got the nod on that one against you.
No, and I have to give props to Koscheck. You know, every time I've seen him fight, he looked to me like a pure wrestler just trying to get by on, you know, pure skill and guts, and, you know, I hated watching him. He wasn't a dynamic fighter. He's kind of actually a boring fighter, probably one of the more boring fighters to come out of the shows, and he seems to have really turned it around. Again, Goulet gets in trouble, and he's not supposed to, supposedly, gets in trouble on his feet,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic, and who would have thought? You know, I thought that my prediction about the fight was Goulet's going to be able to stand with Koscheck, he's going to have the better of him on the feet, and he's also going to be able to sprawl and avoid takedowns. But when you get taken down after eating a hard shot like that and you're rocked, it's a completely different story. So, you know, the last thing I expected was for that to happen, and it happened, and that came around to bite me in the ass a couple different times in this night in my picks.
Yeah, I mean, definitely props to Josh Koscheck, and you could tell there's a little bit of animosity there with some of the internet fans and people like yourself who, you know, have...
Well, I think you're talking about people like you, actually, who actually go on the internet and badmouth him.
Yeah, and... and, you know, he looked great. I'd heard and read reports that he'd been working on a stand-up a lot. I mean, of course, American Kickboxing Academy, you're going to come a long ways very quickly on your feet. And he looked great. And, yeah, definitely give him credit for that win. And I think hopefully Jonathan gets another shot in the UFC. I don't know if he will or not. That remains to be seen. But hopefully he gets another shot because I think that, you know, if you look at the guys he's beaten, and you also look at some of the fighters who have been given numerous chances, and now Jonathan has been given a few chances. But I'd like to see him given, you know, one more shot at least in the UFC.
Yeah, I you know, the thing that surprised me is I think I thought his stand up was better, and it's I can't really buy into the whole, well, Koscheck's been training with American
AKA.
For a couple of years, and now his stand-ups improve. Your stand-up can improve, but to be quite honest, like the stand-up aspect of your game, if you go into a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class and have never taken a class before, and you come out, you're automatically a better fighter. Learning how to do, learning stand-up properly, that's not the case, and there's a learning curve to learning how to box. There's a learning curve to learn Muay Thai and kickboxing. And to internalize those things and make them, you know, make you a better fighter than you were if you were just a pure brawler before, it takes a lot of time. And it takes an incredible investment of time, and it quite literally takes years to become a proficient, being a good technical fighter. And that's one of the things that we've really seen that this demonstrated very well. And Riggs talked a little bit about this, was that you can't just take a few classes in kickboxing or Muay Thai or whatever and then become a skillful technical fighter, because in order to do that, you need a discipline that takes you away from your natural instincts to brawl and throw wild shots and things like that. And it's a huge transition. And so I don't know if Koscheck has become a good striker now or if Goulet's striking just isn't that great, you know?
Well, I think it's a combination.
I thought it was better.
I think it's a combination. I think Koscheck has come a long ways. You could tell right away that he looked lighter on his feet. He was, lining up his angles better. But in saying that, I think as well that people always have to be way on the caution side of listening to sort of, you know, propaganda, quote-unquote, that comes out of fighters' mouths or fighters' camps. And Jonathan, if you look at some of his old TKO fights and you look at what he's done in the UFC, he's not a horrible striker, but he has always... usually wound up on the wrong side of things against proficient strikers like Lou Comeau or against Dwayne Ludwig. And, you know, Jonathan's strengths have always been wrestling, getting a guy down, ground and pounding, avoiding submissions. That's always been his strength. So, you know, he would probably even admit this, you know, maybe perhaps not when he's lining up for a fight right away, but, you know, that his stand-up, it's not like he's a notorious. He's not like a George St. Pierre on the stand-up side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, props to Koscheck. The fight was great. He looked dominant. Goulet, again, ate that hard shot and then never recovered, and then, you know, never really recovered from that, I think. Anyway.
Well, and then we've got Dean Lister and Sasaki. Both of us went with Dean Lister, and I think both of us admitted in the last show that I was kind of out of ignorance. We didn't know too much about him. He impressed me though. He showed a lot of heart. Sasaki, I'm referring to. I hope he gets another shot too. To be honest, I'd like to see him again. You know, he did a great job at staying out of Lister's ground game, avoiding submissions. Lister, you know, he talked about that after with the interview with Joe Rogan, that his conditioning maybe wasn't where it needed to be. Obviously, he was, you know, horribly gassed by early into the third round, but we both went with Lister. What were your thoughts on his performance, Brendan? You think it was kind of lackluster?
Well, this is actually not only lackluster, but it was actually a disappointing fight for me first of all, I think I was disappointed in seeing Lister gas so early. And he looked like that cutting that weight really took a lot out of him. He actually didn't look sharp. For me, he didn't look really sharp the whole fight, and it looked like there was something wrong with him. He didn't, his stand-up wasn't crisp. He looked, and his takedowns and clenches looked kind of mediocre, his work from that. And there's some, you know, sparks of a brilliant grappler, of course, along the way. But, that fight was actually, Sasaki's to win. You know, in the third round, when Lister was basically squaring up with him, with his hands, you know, dropped down to his waist, that was an invitation, basically, to get knocked out. And, Sasaki had no stand up at that point. And, you know, and he hit Lister was a couple undefended shots and, couldn't knock him down. So I think both fighters, I don't know what was going on. And you very seldom see fights like that where both guys are so, where both guys are so gassed that they really can't do anything. And once you see that, you know, this is going to be bad, you know, whatever happens from now on, because, you know, they're never going to recover. So.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, and I can't really put my finger on it exactly what it is in fighters' faces, but there's something about the first time they cut down, and I know Lister's fought at 185 before, but he cut down to 185 recently for this fight. He fought his last fight at 205. And I remember it with Rich Franklin the first time you saw him cut down to 185 with Joe Riggs. There's something about their face, you know, it almost looks like they look gaunt, or there's not as much color in their face. I don't know what it is, but, you know, right away my girlfriend noticed, you know, she said, you know, Lister, he looks like really, really skinny, and obviously he'd cut down, but, you know, she's just referring to the fact that he looked gaunt, you know, like he didn't look healthy, quote unquote. I don't know exactly that is. You know, it's like you look at Franklin now when he comes into the octagon and he's down to 185, he looks fine, you know, but.
Yeah. Well, we've talked to a lot of different guys, and there's guys who are notorious to do it properly and do it poorly, and you just see it. You see it in their performance, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, some guys just simply don't want to cut down.
Yeah,
you know, it's just too hard. It's just too hard on them. And I think where you really see this is people. I know jiu-jitsu fighters and a lot of traditional ground fighters who aren't wrestlers will cut down, but it's not to the extent. We'll cut down, but it's not to the extent that it is in wrestling. And wrestlers, you know, if you start wrestling in high school, and I think in the States you actually start a little bit earlier. You know, you've been cutting weight for how many years? It's nothing. You know, if you've been cutting weight for 10 years, you know what to expect. You know how your body reacts to it, and you kind of have a sense of where that's going. But if you have started studying BJJ and or doing some stand-up stuff, never had to cut weight, and then all of a sudden you become a professional fighter and you're starting to move work down, that's another learning curve, right? And you have to get used to it, and your body has to get used to it. And I think wrestlers just have a natural disposition because of their experience and how, you know, in being able to cut down weight and do it safely and do it effectively, whereas these other guys, you know, probably got to drop 15 pounds and they just, you know, hit the steam or whatever. And even surprisingly, Quentin Jackson had notorious problems with that in Japan in a number of his fights as well.
Yeah, I mean, he'd done some wrestling. If you look at Chris, let's look at Chris Lieben versus Jorge or George Santiago. Brendan, my pick on this is wrong, buddy. You get the nod on this one. So right now we're tied 1-1. You know, Lieben looked good. He still looked like he was, you know, you mentioned this in the Joe Riggs interview. He got rocked a couple times. That right hand by Santiago landed a couple times. But here again, you see, I think, somewhat the contrast between Anderson Silva and Santiago, that the Lieben chin seemed like it was a factor. He looked like he was rocked, but not too dazed, and he comes back with that thunderous left hook, and it's over.
Yeah, I don't know. Lieben, it makes me sick to watch him stand up, and because I picked him, I kind of had a vested interest in how he was doing exactly again. I didn't have my usual dispassionate perspective. But, you know, he's a very unorthodox stance, and it looks like he leaves his chin open. He sticks it out all the time, and I don't know if you cure that. How you cure that? If you want to cure it, you know, if that obviously is going to work. That unconventional style seems to work for him. But here's the question for Lieben: do you go with you go with that knowing that you can win probably 80% of your fights, or you can, you know, you can hang in 80% of your fights. But that, you know, when you come across the Anderson Silvas of the world, that they will ultimately take you out, you know, or you sort of make that unconventional style work for you.
And then Diego Sanchez versus Carol Parisian. You went with Carol, I went with Diego, and you know, I'm going to get the win here, Brendan. I'm going to come away, walk away with a 2-1 victory. So everyone out there, you can tally it up. But
let me say this: if it were different, if they fought again tomorrow, I would still pick Carol.
Yeah, I think the edge clearly wasn't.
Let's talk about that.
I'm not going to deal in hypotheticals with you, all right? You know, I think the edge, and I think Riggs referred to this too when we were talking to him, was that Carroll looked like he gassed. I mean, he took a couple hard shots as well from Diego, and you know, that looked like that took some steam out of his out of him. But I think if he had been better conditioned, he in the fight would have to go 4 or 5 rounds. He looked like he might have come out with the win, but Diego, you know, in the third round, and I just can't get over the fact. And this reflects poorly on my research skills because I really should have looked up which judge gave it 30-26 in favor of Diego. But that's
ridiculous. I think most people had it
29-28.
Most people will argue that it was Diego round one and Carl round two, and round three was the third round was up for grabs. But there, something strange, and we should really try and get Carl again. Because
I don't know if you can say the third round's up for grabs. I know some people are saying that.
No. I meant going into the third round.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever was going to win the third round would have won the fight. I think.
Yeah.
Or won the fight. You know, Diego won the third round for sure.
Yeah.
You could argue that Carl came close in the first, but he spent the thing I was interested in about the fight was that I know Carl fights with contacts in for some reason, and I don't know if he did. He still does, but he's had
some fighters need it. They have to. They can't see a thing if they don't.
But my question is, after he got that shot in the first round, you know, he ate that hard shot. He went down, but he had this. I don't know if you noticed this, but he had this really pained expression on his face. And it wasn't an expression like he'd just taken a hard shot. He didn't look stunned, but he literally looked pained, like he was in anguish.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it seemed that he was talking a little bit to the referee as well. So I don't know if he got poked at the same time, but he would always go by. He would always go back, and you noticed throughout the entire fight that his eye was really bothering him. You know, he'd always touch underneath it, mm-hmm. right where he had that big mouse forming, but it seemed like there was something else going on there. So I don't know whether he got poked, and it took him a long time to recover from that. And that just the look on his face would lead me to believe that he did get poked, because if you've ever been poked in the eye, it's incredibly painful. It's not just uncomfortable, but it causes you some severe pain, not like getting punched, which is uncomfortable, but in a completely different way.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened there in the first, but it seemed like it took him a long time just to ride it out, and basically that's what he spent the first half of the first round doing, is just recovering from that.
Let's get out of here. Full Contact Fighter Radio, we'll see you, and we'll listen to us next time, all right?
Bye.